Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Any moment in Utah, officials will detail the charges against the man who killed Charlie Kirk. In an hour from now, a man has joined us a number of times while two separate times he was U.S. attorney for the state of Minnesota. And also now multiple times since he has left, Andy Luger is going to join us. Can't have a better guest than Andy on a day like this for him to react to these charges on this case and also the terrorism charges dropped against Luigi Mangione for his murder. And again, it's just despicable on a day like this when the terrorism charges were dropped, Dave. There were numerous people outside the courtroom applauding. Nobody likes paying a lot of money for the health insurance. Nobody likes getting denied. Nobody likes watching someone close to you deal with more pain than they should. No one likes or wants anybody to be put bankrupt. And all of us, to some levels, to a little bit, to extraordinarily painfully watching something related to healthcare, but the individuals who still celebrate Luigi Mangione, you should be embarrassed. It is despicable. He murdered a man. Two children will not have a father. And every bit as outrageous as killing Charlie Kirk. Wife will never have thousands, tens of thousands of moments of memories, and Charlie Kirk's children will have little, if any, memory of him. We're going to get into part of the Kirk talk here. But again, Andy Luger in less than an hour. So the President of the United States, he met the media yesterday. He met the media today. what do you think? How many times does he meet the media in a typical week? Six? Seven? Honestly.
It's nearly every day.
Yeah, it is. And I don't always agree.
Sometimes multiple times a day, too, we should say.
There was one day recently where it was three times. And it's like, I don't know when they do anything, but they, listen, the last guy hid, and this guy thinks it's key to his popularity? Often, I don't agree, including today when he's threatening an Australian reporter and Jonathan Carl. That's nice. So yesterday, when he's in the Oval Office, he's asked because across the country, flags are flying in most states at half staff, right? Not New York, not New Jersey. I don't know if they're the only states, but they're the states I saw. Also, we should mention, all but five of the NFL teams who hosted a home game on Sunday had a moment of silence for Charlie Kirk. Among the teams who did not, the Minnesota Vikings. So that has created some controversy also. Because clearly in this town, the sports teams, in light of George Floyd, made a point of that. I mean, the Twins had the N racism on the wall for multiple years, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So the president is asked yesterday by Nancy Cordes from CBS News about Charlie Kirk and your decision here with the flags, and in contrast to what happened when Melissa Hortman, her husband Mark, and their dog were murdered. Is this the question, too?
I think I got a little of the question.
A little bit of the question, and here's the president's response.
Do you think it would have been fitting to lower the flags to half staff when Melissa Hortman, the Minnesota House Speaker, was gunned down by an assassin as well?
I'm not familiar. Oh,
the Minnesota House Speaker, a Democrat, was assassinated this summer.
Well, if the governor had asked me to do that, I would have done that. But the governor of Minnesota didn't ask me. I wouldn't have thought of that, but I would have if somebody had asked me. People make requests for the lowering of the flag, and oftentimes you have to say no because it would be a lot of lowering. The flag would never be up. Had the governor of Minnesota asked me to do that, I would have done that gladly.
Okay, I saw some people going at him hard on the first part when he's a bit confused. It's also possible he didn't hear the question. Okay? I'm not timid in criticizing Donald Trump, but he's 80. Okay? If he doesn't hear everything razor sharp, come on. Now, on the content, I'll hold off on my answer on the content because here's what the president said, and you got to pay close attention here because this is the definitive response when Caitlin Collins from CNN asked him, I think it was the day after the Hortmans had been killed, right?
I think you are right.
If not, it was 2 days after. Max, would he have a conversation with Governor Walz about what took place? Let's note that the White House and the governor's office, that people within the White House and the governor's office the morning of did have conversations, okay? So it wasn't like there was no communication between the office and the White House. But the president was asked, in light of, and again, I don't believe Vance Belter was captured at this point, but in light of a murder of a Speaker Emerita, and clearly at that time we knew also at the Hoffman's house, we would not know at that point about Ann Rest, we would not know about the list, but the president was asked, would you have a conversation with Governor Walz?
And this is a board Air Force One, so a little difficult to hear. But
I think the governor of Minnesota is so whacked out. I'm not calling. Why would I call him? I could call him and say, hi, how you doing? The guy doesn't have a clue. He's a mess. So, you know, I could be nice and call him, but why waste time?
He's whacked out.
A mess.
He's a mess.
Why waste time?
Why waste time? Just pathetic. Honestly. Again, when he has turned this quickly into far left, far left, far left, and we're going to talk about that next segment, he is incapable of showing decency to the other side with any consistency. Rare moments? Sure. Rare. But at any point since Charlie Kirk was brutally murdered, and they're laying out the charges right now, absolutely unacceptable, awful, has he showed unity in any way to you? Any point, we collectively have to come together. We're all in this. Let's get better.
No. No. I mean, From the night of, talking about all of the political assassinations, and his list was everybody on the right.
Yep.
Nobody on the left.
And he said at one point, you know what the radical right wants? Laws obeyed and all that. I mean, Chris Wray, the former FBI head, who Donald Trump hired, by the way, and Donald Trump was going to fire him before Wray just quit before the second term of the president, laid out the biggest threat to this country was right-wing extremists. There's study after study about the rise of right-wing extremists. And to suggest, let me be quick, to suggest there aren't left-wing extremists who are capable of murder and taunting off comments, absolutely there are.
Clearly they are.
Clearly they are. But, again, like Tom Friedman said yesterday in his column, this could have been a moment to have, as Tom wrote, Barack and Michelle Obama, George and Laura Bush, Bill and Hillary Clinton, the leaders of the Senate and House, all Supreme Court justices, and say something along the lines of, we're going to still have our political differences, and we're going to be passionate and intellectually defend it. But you have to understand, we're all here to condemn this, and we're going to act in that manner. But the president won't do that because he thinks he's right all the time, thinks admitting he's wrong is a sign of weakness, and he's honestly trying to tell us, as the president of the United States, he needed the governor to call him. Could I make the argument that somebody from the governor's office should have asked? Sure. Sure. But he never thought of it? Doesn't surprise me. If this would have been a prominent liberal activist who was speaking out and going to places where people did not agree with him or her as a liberal, and it was as vile as this murder of Charlie Kirk, is there any chance at all, that Donald Trump would have said, let's lower the flags?
Point two?
I'm going zero. I'm going zero. I just don't think there's any chance. And when he's sitting there and continues to talk about all the left does is demonize, there are plenty of people on the left who do. And I'm not talking about, you can still have very strong opinions, passionate, let's hope based in fact. But there's a line that clearly enemy of the country. Now he's suing the New York Times for $15 billion because he doesn't agree with them. And again, I'm not defending Walls in any way about his comments when he was joking about the president's health potentially dying. We crushed him multiple days on that. That is absolutely unacceptable, what the governor did. I don't care if it was in a smaller group when he's playing to his base. That is awful. So his hands are not clean in this either. But the other guy just does this on a regular basis and shows no signs of slowing down. You want to react? You can. 651-461-9226. You can call and text right now. 651-461-9226. I want to talk Pella. And I want to talk about a company that I've believed in at the last two houses I lived in. I lived in this neighborhood before I moved for 25 years. And this house was, we were not the first owners and moved in. And luckily enough, the folks at the house had made a decision with Pella Windows and Doors. Thank you. Because the house's windows were great. A couple of years ago when I didn't think I was going to move, I had Pella come out. After going to the showroom in Plymouth, they have showrooms in Woodbury and also Brooklyn Park. And I saw what they had. Then I went to PellaNorthland.com. Had him come out with a free visit and started working with the station. And guess what? Really changed my kitchen. And when I moved, I made sure Pella Windows would be a part of it. 100 years of success. When you go to PellaNorthland.com, you can schedule a free visit to your home, to your cabin, condo, whatever you have, maybe both. And they'll assess where you're at. I believe in them. And I think if you talk to since they've been around for 100 years, hundreds of thousands of customers, they'll back it up. Great opportunity here in September, too. One offer is 0% APR for 48 months. The other offer, you might think, is better. $250 off qualifying windows and $500 off qualifying doors. Track them down today. PellaNorthland.com.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think that's you applauding in the background when Bill Guerin says that, too.
I wrote the script for him.
Thank you. Among the attacks, look at yourself. You're part of the issue by continuing to point out negative things on both sides that divide us. I am not condemning political opinions in any way, and often point out areas where I agree with politicians. We're talking about someone who was murdered at 31, and Charlie Kirk's calling card was his strong opinions and his willingness to debate them. So if you think now what people should do is not give their opinion and not defend the opinion, then you are the opposite of Charlie Kirk. The absolute opposite. There is a line of demonizing and political violence. This show never, ever, ever will ever get close to advocating for any level of political violence or not condoning it, whether I agree with the person or not, or if people are mocking it. But stop with the you shouldn't give your opinion, because the first person who would disagree with you is Charlie Kirk. Now, somebody talks about Ilhan Omar in this conversation. I have had, now, the last time we had on Ilhan Omar, it was after Annunciation.
Yeah, day of.
And it was the day of. And it was a very emotional conversation, and we received a lot of texts saying, you know what, I normally don't agree with her, but that was impressive. I've also had multiple interviews. And even the debate I moderated, where it got testy between us, because I've pushed strong back at her at times. She was on with Mehdi Hasan in the days after Charlie Kirk's death. And yes, two liberals. And yes, for some, two Muslim, which for some, not all, absolutely positively, not all, but it agitates you. And that's gross. Where quickly they both said this was awful and expressed their sympathy to Charlie Kirk's family and said this cannot happen. But she also said other comments, okay, including pointing out that Kirk was willing to debate and downplay the death of George Floyd. That's a fact. He did that often. He's not the only one. There are many people who believe that. Downplayed slavery and what black people have gone through in this country by saying Juneteenth shouldn't exist. Omar then agreed with Mehdi Hasan, who believed Kirk just wanted to have a civil debate. They call that a complete rewriting history. Ilhan continued. There are people out there talking about him just wanting to have a civil debate. There's nothing more effed up, you know, like than to completely pretend that, you know, his words and actions have not been recorded in existence for the last decade or so. This is part of the problem here. That over the last 4 or 5 days, if you point out when Charlie Kirk laughed and joked about the attack on Paul Pelosi or talked about the death penalty for Joe Biden, or the rape comments, you're not allowed to say those. Again, he should not be dead. Never, ever should have happened. You shouldn't wish harm to someone you disagree with. But the idea that if you disagree with him or her and you can't point out where you disagreed with them is, again, the opposite of Charlie Kirk. When he would go to the mainly liberal campuses where liberals were trying to stop him from appearing, including at the place where he was murdered. There was a petition, what was it, like 3,000, 4,000 against him appearing and a small amount appearing? And that happens too often. It's classic Nancy Mace, let's pick out Ilhan, She's the boogeyman. And by the way, do I think some of her comments have been anti-Semitic? Hell yeah, I do. I told her that. Do I think some of her other comments at times I've massively disagreed with? Absolutely. But this idea that you can't bring up the comments which allowed Charlie Kirk to be well known, to be loved, to be detested, to be a part of his rise to, I mean, extraordinary success at a young age is nonsense, right, Dave? So it's just easy for individuals to say, yeah, we hate Ilhan, so let's bring this up without mentioning that she said repeatedly this shouldn't have happened. So kind of picking and choosing on that one. And that doesn't mean I haven't called her out on other comments, because I have. All right, let's abruptly switch. Let's remind you the prosecutors are laying out the charges against the man who murdered Charlie Kirk right now. They have confirmed in the last few minutes that they will seek the death penalty against the shooting suspect, Tyler Robinson. On that topic and the dropping of charges against Luigi Mangione today, former U.S. attorney for Minnesota, Andy Luger's with us in about 35 minutes. But when we take the break right now, we'll give you traffic, weather, and talk with an excellent guest about the passing of Robert Redford, dying his sleep at the age of 89.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Robert Redford has left us at the age of 89, certainly worth a conversation to say the least. The chief film critic for Variety, Peter DeBruge, is kind enough to join us on a day when I'm sure he is extraordinarily busy. So, Peter, thank you so much for giving us some time. Peter's on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. There's so many ways I can go with this man's career, which lasted the length it did, not only the volume, but the just tremendous piece of work and, you know, the stretch of movie making, Sundance, when he stepped behind the screen with Ordinary People. Why do you think so many people today are touched by the passing of Robert Redford?
Well, Robert Redford certainly had a rich and varied career. I mean, I think of it as kind of having had three major chapters. He was an actor. He called action. You know, he won an Oscar for his first film as a director for Ordinary People and made several classics. And of course, he was an activist, both for the environment, but for the film industry itself. And I think that one of his most beloved roles is the Sundance Kid in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He gave that name to the U.S. Film Festival, which launched the independent film revolution. So I think he was kind of key to two moments in which Hollywood was kind of teetering. These days, it seems like the sky's always falling with the film industry. But like, you know, the late 60s, Hollywood was really having this kind of identity crisis, losing eyeballs to television and, you know, with movies like Bonnie and Clyde and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. The new Hollywood revolution, of which Redford was one of the key faces, you know, kind of gave a whole new, you know, chapter to Hollywood. And then I think come the 80s, we're starting to see, you know, Hollywood stumbling again, studios losing their way again, and it was independent cinema, which is where we suddenly saw, I think, the shift to filmmakers. And by that point, of course,
right,
Redford had become one.
That's a great answer. I'm glad you mentioned Ordinary People right away. That is a movie that still stays with me. I bet I watch it every 3-4 years. It's pretty amazing that this is his first time directing. And he has this storyline about a family with the loss of a child and how it has affected them so differently, where Mary Tyler Moore is villainous. I mean, she is just vicious, and Donald Sutherland is her husband who doesn't know how to respond to it. And Timothy Hutton is the child that Mary Tyler Moore ostracized and couldn't relate to. To have that type of success right away as a director is awfully rare.
No question. And I mean, I think there are few actors who've sort of had the success or the intelligence that Redford does. You know, the Clint Eastwood is probably the next best example, and he's had a very long career. But I think that Redford was drawn to a different kind of film, and he was drawn to a kind of film that wasn't necessarily the type that he was making as a star. I mean, there were two major kind of Oscar upsets that went in Robert Redford's favor. You know, Ordinary People won Best Picture over Raging Bull, which a lot of people took issue with. But like you, I really appreciate Ordinary People and, you know, prefer it as a film. I think it gets to something true about, you know, the, and relatable about the human condition. And the other, of course, was Out of Africa, which was up against Steven Spielberg's Color Purple. And, you know, that was kind of the last in the movie star chapter of Redford's career. He continued to make movies. He made Legal Eagles right after that, and movies like Sneakers and, you know, lots of stuff that we've loved. Not so long ago, The Old Man and the Gun, you know, it's kind of like a throwback to his early days. But, you know, there's this kind of transition that happens there in the 80s. And I think we see there are whole generations who I think know Redford as the face of the Sundance Film Festival and the champion of this whole new chapter of filmmaking. And of course, those of us who have a little more wear on our tires remember him as the movie star he was.
Yeah. On the movie star part, Peter, how, you know, obviously one of the best looking individuals to ever appear in front of a camera, man or woman, how did he deal with that part of it, with the looks that clearly had to open doors, but also when you would see him, you would realize this is more than just eye candy. This is a man who absolutely can immerse himself and bring you into a role and bring you into that movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing, especially now. I think we see more movie stars who are kind of in the Robert Redford vein. I mean, Brad Pitt seems like the obvious kind of successor to that look, the kind of California golden boy, born on the West Coast and, you know, kind of that type, as opposed to the more, you know, tortured, neurotic New York, you know, star. But I think that he was really conscious of the idea that he didn't want to be pigeonholed. I mean, of course, his looks could play to his leading man advantage. But I mean, I think he was constantly working against it. Sometimes, you know, I don't know if this is true or apocryphal, but like, you know, turning down roles, like, you know, not going after The Graduate, you know, the Mike Nichols movie that launched Dustin Hoffman, you know, because he didn't want to kind of continue on a certain vein. But of course, I mean, we know him as a romantic lead from Barefoot in the Park, from The Way We Were, you know. I love 3 Days of the Condor, which to me is one of the sexiest films of the 70s.
Sure. Well, another one, and it's not that anonymous, and this is a show that talks a lot of politics, but I think he's just spectacular in The Candidate. I think it's just a great movie, which, by the way, people should continue to watch.
The Candidate, and of course, All the President's Men, which may be the great masterpiece in which he participated, and something that's really shedding the movie star thing. It's a really character part, you know, opposite Dustin Hoffman as Woodward and Bernstein.
Yeah, if I have to watch one Robert Redford movie, that's it. And it's a long list. But
yeah.
You know, for
it's
me,
the right choice, and you're right. It's not an easy call because he's got so many.
Yeah, and it's you know, seeing him with so many brilliant actors in that movie. And so quickly after the Woodward Bernstein so quickly after the country is still ripped apart, and just whether it was on his own or the back and forth with Hoffman or Jason Robards as Ben Bradley is just spectacular. I think sometime tonight, whenever I'm done, I'm going to find All the President's Men and watch it again.
Well, that's a great one. I mean, there's so many people can check out. Jeremiah Johnson's great. Yeah. You know, I love Sneakers. I mean, if you have free time tonight, do yourself a favor and watch a Robert Redford movie. I mean, yes. He left us so many great ones.
I am someone who certainly enjoys sports, love talking about it, and appreciate sports movies when they are done well. I know you've watched plenty of sports movies. What about Robert Redford and The Natural?
You know, I confess, I've never seen The Natural.
Really?
I know it's everybody's favorite, but I don't want to derail this with other sports movies, but like, can any baseball movie be better than Bull Durham? You know, you tell me.
It's very different than Bull Durham.
Yes, of course. Yeah. They're polar opposites, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the movie. That's the Robert Redford movie I'll pop in tonight.
All right. Why didn't Robert Redford and Paul Newman do another movie together? And how close did they get, you know?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because The Sting is another one of my favorites of his. You know, it's like it comes off of the Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid energy. The two of them had such chemistry. I don't know the, you know, kind of like inside negotiations or anything, but it's interesting that, you know, they're both leading men. And I think it is kind of known that with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, there was this whole thing where Paul Newman was the star, and would this beautiful young actor upstage him?
Right.
And
or could he hold up with him?
Yeah, it worked out well enough that they made another movie together, The Sting, which won Best Picture that year.
Yeah. And also, in reading stories about it over the years, just the great friendship between the two, the practical jokes they played upon each other. It's just, it showed how selective they were about their craft, too. That knowing that the public all wanted to see them together, if they found the right movie, they were going to do it, but it just didn't pop up. Last thing, and I'll let you go, Peter. You talked about, you know, when he backed away, and clearly, I mean, enormously involved in the environment, politically active. It's not like he stopped making movies, you know, when you got to the 90s and aughts, but it dropped off. Did he feel like that's just a part of his life he did not want to continue to do because he was so busy in other areas? Or did he talk about just the quality of roles were not there?
I don't think it was about the quality of roles. I think, you know, he obviously believed in the future of cinema and was helping kind of pave that way with Sundance. What I think we saw is him being very selective about the kind of movies he would do. And it's interesting that in the very last, you know, in the 20-teens, you know, he was making movies with Sundance directors. Like, you know, he made All Is Lost, which is basically a one-man show with J.C. Chandor, who'd kind of come out of the Sundance world and worked with David Lowery on a couple films. That's, you know, the director of Old Man and the Gun, who done Ain't Them Bobby Saints. I think what had happened is he had effectively retired from acting, but he kind of, you know, would get pulled in for that one last job if there was a real talent he had kind of connected with through the Sundance Film Festival and who had a role that was really deserving. But we see this with, like, you know, Gene Hackman retired and stepped away from acting. I mean, I feel like it's something people are allowed to do, even if it's, you know, it deprives us of more work.
Yeah. I'm thinking of me here, Peter. I want more great movies. You are excellent. I hope we can reach out again. And thank you so much for coming on and talking about Robert Redford.
Happy to do it. Thank you.
Peter DeBruge from Variety. He's their chief film critic. Okay, two questions. We'll have to go fast here when we come back. You can watch one, that's it, one Redford movie. What is it? For me, it's clearly All the President's Men. Dave, you're saying you haven't watched as many as others. If you can watch one, what are you watching?
I've seen All the President's Men. I've seen The Natural. I've not seen The Sting. I would like to try this
guy. Okay. Butch Cassidy?
I'd give that a shot. Sure.
You haven't seen either?
No.
Come on.
Sorry.
Let's go. What is the one Redford movie you'd watch? 651-461-9226. And is he the best looking man ever to appear in movies? And if not, who is? Because Robert Redford, a damn good looking human being.
He's on the Rushmore, as they would say.
Oh, he absolutely. If Robert Redford is not the best looking man to appear in movies, Who is? Right, Pitt, probably a contender.
Mm-hmm.
George. Is George a contender?
George is a contender, sure.
For sure. Who else you got? 651-461-9226. I'm going to tell you about Twins tickets because this is it.
This is the last one.
This is our last Twins ticket. When the Twins and Yankees meet, I'm like a heavyweight champion. Who won the last time they have the belt? Twins won last night. Dominated the Yankees.
Oh, Yankees threw in the towel after round two.
Yeah, they're giving up. Twins and Guardians this Sunday. Don't call in now. And it's also a kid appreciation day. First 5,000 kids, 12 and under, receive a baseball hat courtesy of Target. You'll hear the thing. Okay? What's your one Robert Redford movie? And is he the best looking man to ever appear in movies? If not, who? Among the Redford movies, there we go. This is way up there for a lot of people, the way we were.
Yep. Caller off air mentioned it.
My mother loved this movie. The Sting, Sneakers. Here's another athletic movie he was great in, Downhill Racer.
Mm.
A Walk in the Woods with Redford and Nick Nolte. I don't remember that one. The Last Castle. That's Gandolfini. Cray cray. Old Man and the Gun, yes.
Another caller mentioned The Chase.
Chase, yes, The Chase for sure. Blending in better looking males. Brad Pitt. Peak Brad Pitt or peak Robert Redford, Dave Harrigan, who you got?
I'd go home with either.
Yeah.
I mean,
two heterosexual guys here, William Dodge, they're both unbelievably good looking.
I mean, Paul
guys.
Newman, not bad either.
Paul Newman for sure. Where has Dave been? About 19 question marks. Go watch Butch Cassidy right now. It's a great. Great movie. Jeremiah Johnson. Walk in the Woods. Naked Gun. Yeah. Very funny. Wrong answers only work. Josh Duhamel. One of Us. Gosling. Cruz. Redford. Newman. Clooney. We'll talk about the charges against the man who murdered Charlie Kirk early next hour.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.